a playlist original.
Welcome to the Pilot Podcast,
where we review the pilot episodes of TV shows to answer your question, should I watch this?
My name is BJ.
And my name is Me Too.
And this week, we're watching Queer as Folk on Peacock, Players on Paramount Plus, God's Favorite Idiot on Netflix, and First Kill on Netflix.
So stay tuned to the end to find out what BJ's esports name would be.
Oh, I don't know. I've never done any esports.
You'll come up with one.
Well, before we get to that, how about you tell us what was happening in New Orleans?
All right, you're talking about Queer as Folk on Peacock. This is a reboot of the British American series and follows a diverse group of friends and frenemies following a tragedy. A few people we meet in this first episode are Brody, played by Devin Way, who returns to New Orleans after leaving med school. His ex, Noah, played by Johnny Sibley, is also hooking up with Brody's bestie, Daddius, played by Chris Renfro. And we meet aspiring drag student and teen Mingus, played by Finn Argus, and Mingus's teacher slash Brody's bestie, Ruthie, played by Jesse James Keitel.
So Me Too, you named quite a few characters, and I feel like this is a pretty full cast. Do you think it worked well? Did you spend enough time with each character?
I thought they did such a good job, actually, balancing the This Is Us of multi-cast members, and they're all interconnected in some way, and that's revealed throughout the pilot. They balanced those introductions with making sure that we know a little bit of the mess that comes with each person. I thought it was really well done. I didn't feel like I had too much of anyone or too little of anyone, and I was able to develop a really good care for the people that I encountered.
I agree. I really like how they used Brody to introduce us to everyone. He has a lot of drama going on with his family, his friends, his ex, but it wasn't overwhelming. They presented it in a very easy to understand but entertaining way.
Yes, all roads led through Brody. And I thought that he handled that really well. I imagine it is intimidating for an actor to be the anchor of the show, to be the person that all of these plot stories tend to flow through. And I thought that the portrayal was so balanced, where Brody had lots of good character, but also when Brody needed to be in the background, when he needed to facilitate story rather than be centered in story, I thought that was done really well. And I just thought the performances overall on the show were so strong.
Did anyone in this ensemble stand out to you?
I think you already know I was as a little peek behind the curtain, y'all. BJ and I were talking about this before we recorded. I was so in love with Mingus and their performance at the drag show. It was so beautiful seeing this child liberated and excited to present themselves in a way that brings them joy, brings people joy. It was such a good first drag performance. So shout out to Finn Argus. You absolutely stole my heart. I would also say I want to see more of Cher. And I hope that we do get to see more of Cher, who is played by CG. I loved their dynamic with Ruthie. And I hope that we get to see more of Cher independently versus Cher in relation to Ruthie, because every time they were on screen, I was just sucked in.
I hope not too independently. We get a joke from Cher saying, I hope you're going to be around to raise these twins. But I also like Cher. Ruthie was the standout to me. I liked seeing the contrast between her as Miss O'Neill, the teacher at school, and then Ruthie, the friend to Brody, because they're so different. And unfortunately, those two sides of her lives do kind of come together for a bit, which was also fun to see how she handled that.
I agree. And I know we're using a lot of positive language, but we should offer the warning that the show offers as well, that the first episode has a scene at the gay club that is similar to the Pulse nightclub shooting. It seems to be an allusion to that tragedy. So BJ knew what was going to happen before going in. For whatever reason, I was painfully ignorant watching this first episode. So I was just watching these beautiful performances at the drag show, sucked in, and then all of a sudden this awful thing happened. And that transition could have been handled so clumsily. And instead, it was just beautiful and very difficult storytelling. I also think the show came out at a tough time where we're thinking so much about gun violence in this country, but they handled it really well. And I didn't feel like it was gratuitous violence or violence just for plot. It felt like really beautiful storytelling that will allow us to get to know these characters on an even deeper level.
Exactly. I don't feel like they added this for shock value or just to heighten the drama. It is very organic to the story. It is intense emotionally. And if you don't like seeing blood, you do see a bit. Nothing too graphic, in my opinion, but that is just some content warning for you. You will see injured people.
One thing I want to say before we get into ratings is there is such a care and love in this show, but also such a great, honest storytelling without judgment or angles. So to your point, BJ, about Ruthie, we see her with her partner, we see her with her friend, we see her at the club, we see her in these different ways where she is a teacher, she is a future parent, she is someone at the club dancing and doing drugs, and there is no judgment on it. I never felt as the viewer that I needed to be like, oh, this one is good and this one is bad. It just was an honest telling of a whole person. Same with all of the like drug, sex, and rock and roll that we watched in this first episode. I loved that they were just like, this is part of this group's culture and how they enjoy themselves. And there isn't judgment in any way. This is just what happens, and get to know them.
Yeah, you're just seeing people live in their lives.
Which I love. I'm nosy.
So does that mean you'll keep watching more episodes of Queer as Folk on Peacock?
Yes, but caveat for my fellow babies, my fellow criers when we watch things, this made me sob. So I want to watch again seriously, but I need to take my time with it because I cannot be that emotionally wrecked throughout. Though I read that the show does get lighter after this first episode.
Yeah, I think this was the big thing, and now they can all bounce back from that. I would be very upset if there was another tragedy on this scale in a later episode in this season.
True, true. They sort of did it up, and then that's it.
What would I rate this? I think I would put it in the would watch while doing laundry. Honestly, I'm more likely to just ask you what's going on, specifically between Brody and Noah. But hey, maybe I will catch another episode.
Ooh, we didn't even get into that because so much wonderful stuff happened. I'm so excited for the juice there. And shout out to Johnny Sibley, who has been on everything I've watched recently.
Hey, getting work.
All right, Beej, well, why don't we take things from New Orleans to wherever it is that they do esports.
Well, as long as you have a stable internet connection, you can do it in a lot of places. You're talking about Players on Paramount Plus. This series follows a fictional pro League of Legends team called the Fugitives. And this esports team is pursuing their first championship after years of close calls and heartaches. And to win it all, they have their veteran player who's 27 years old, Cream Cheese, played by Misha Brooks. But now he has to work together and also butt heads with a Prodigy who's joined the team, a 17-year-old rookie, Organism, played by DeJour Jones. So Me Too, you, I know, are not deep into the world of esports, but did this show suck you in?
I would say that I didn't necessarily care about if they won the championship. However, I understood the stakes and I understood why Cream Cheese and Organism were so passionate about winning the championship. For Cream Cheese, it's because he is 27 years old. There is no older person on the planet. He is ancient in this sport. And for Organism, he's a 17-year-old rookie. He's playing with people that he really admires. And he's a little bit socially awkward, we learn in this first episode. So he has a lot to prove. And he wants to win this championship with and for his heroes and to be a hero himself. So I understood the stakes. And I should say that the people that made this show are the same minds behind American Vandal, which was a fantastic mockumentary on Netflix that unfortunately wasn't renewed because I don't think Netflix owned all of it, allegedly, was the issue. That it was owned partially by, I believe, CBS, so we couldn't get more of it. But that one I strongly recommend too.
I don't know if I cared as much as you, even though it doesn't sound like you exactly cared if they won.
Yeah, it's that I understood the stakes. I got why everyone was so up in arms. I just don't know that the show went far enough to get me to be like, oh man, I hope they crush that Lorax or whatever is happening.
Isn't the Lorax from Dr. Seuss?
Sure, yep.
I like your answer. I don't care, but I understand why people care.
Yeah.
I feel pretty similarly. I don't feel like this is a team I want to root for, and that makes it harder to care. I am fascinated by the team dynamics, because not only do we see a lot with Cream Cheese and Organism and the other players like Jugger, but we also see the coach, we see the marketing VP, we see the team owner, the team owner's daughter, and they're all of these supporting roles for the esports team. And I think it's really cool to see their perspective and why they're motivated to have these players win the championship.
I also like that they did a little bit of the background on the players themselves. So we learn that Cream Cheese... Sorry, that name gets me every time. That is such a funny name for a character. But we learn that Cream Cheese was put out of his home because of his love for video games. So he's a big chip on his shoulder and a lot to prove. We learn that Organism is very big focal point in his home. His older brother even moves with him into this esports house to try to ensure success. So like you said, there's so many people around them. And then in this first episode, they did a good job of giving us a little bit of history on both in that classic mockumentary style. So I thought that was really good. I would add, though, that I wish there was a little more humor in this first episode, because I think it relied too much on believing we'd care. And I wish they padded it with a few more jokes.
I have a similar feeling. Even though it was a mockumentary, it wasn't humorous enough. I think they really tried to get some of that humor with Cream Cheese's big personality and selfish moments. But then you contrast that with Organism, who's so quiet and reserved that it kind of sucks away any of the humor that could be there. And I'm not sure if their rivalry or... hopefully budding friendship, since they're on a team. I don't know if there's enough there for me to be interested as well from a humorous perspective or even from just a fan rooting for the team.
I agree. I think they could have done more in this first episode to make us care about the dynamic between Cream Cheese and Organism more directly. I get why Organism wants to impress Cream Cheese and take over his legacy. I get why Cream Cheese is so threatened by Organism, but I wish we got to see them interact with each other a bit more in this first episode, because the other thing this show hinges on is our care for them together as characters as they try to win a championship. And I wanted to see a little bit more of what it looks like for them to connect with each other. Though, light spoiler, there's a great semi-interaction with them at the end of the episode that I just loved.
And we needed more of that. That would have made the episode more engaging if we had more of that earlier.
I completely agree. This one was such an up and down pilot for me, where there was some humor, Cream Cheese as a name got me so many times, and also I just wish they developed the care a little bit better. So I would say for my rating, I maybe would watch while folding laundry or cooking. I don't think the show is enough to suck me in, at least based on this pilot. But if you liked American Vandal, if you like mockumentaries, if you're searching for another funny-ish background show to have on while you're doing chores or cooking or whatever it is, then I think this one is for you. And I think that's how I'll keep enjoying it.
I think you're going to be on your own. I don't see myself watching again. I don't play League of Legends. I know a lot of people who are in the esports world, and I think I'd rather watch real esports than this mockumentary. This wasn't funny enough, and even though I can see where they're going with it, that doesn't draw me into the second episode. So, Me Too, how about we take a break? Because just like esports players need to refuel, we also need to take care of our bodies.
All right, let's do it.
So recently, I started taking this new supplement, AG1, because I wanted to see what all the hype was about.
Oh, okay. And tell me more about it. What's in it?
AG1, made by Athletics Greens, has 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens.
Okay, that's a lot of big words, but they all sound very good for you. How does it taste, though? Are you like chewing grass, or how does it work?
Good question. You'll be pleased to hear it has a mild tropical taste.
Okay, like a casual fruit snack?
Exactly, but with vitamins.
And how much does it cost?
Less than $3 a day.
Ooh. Ooh, okay, so less than like a cold brew habit.
You know it fits in your budget.
Has this been reviewed online? Are other people checking this out? What about this hype?
Smart, smart. Get a second opinion. You want to hear from more than just me. And Athletic Greens has over 7,000 five-star reviews. And I think it would be great for our listeners to check it out.
Nice. So to make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1 year supply of immune supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/emerging. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/emerging to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. Okay, now we're back. Let's take things over to heaven with God's Favorite Idiot on Netflix. This is an apocalyptic workplace comedy that follows Clark, played by Ben Falcone, who is struck by lightning and gains the ability to glow. The person who witnesses it and tries to tell everybody about it is Emily, his workplace crush, played by Melissa McCarthy. So, Beach, how do you feel about this show, where in the premise they tell us the apocalypse is coming, but in the pilot, we're not introduced to that?
You're hinting at a lot of stuff in our review. I will say it was an interesting opening as we see Clark get his ability to glow. He's struck by lightning, by a very strange storm. But then this entire episode is really led by Emily's character, who has not seen the movie Emily, but that's okay. But I think one of the things that stuck out to me since we focus so much on Emily is I'm not sure if we're supposed to be laughing at her or laughing with her. She is a larger-than-life character that speaks a lot about recreational and just unfortunate misuse of drugs and alcohol.
Yeah, I agree. You made this point when we were talking earlier about how this feels so unlike Queer as Folk, which feels silly to say, but follow me, listeners, in that show was so non-judgmental in talking about his characters, whereas in this one, I couldn't tell if I was to judge Emily, if I was supposed to think of her as someone, to your point, BJ, to laugh at versus with, and also be like, oh, bless her heart. Or if I'm supposed to root for her. I couldn't tell how they were framing her as a character. Though I will say that for a comedy show, my favorite comedy in the episode was between her and her coworker Tom, played by Chris Sandiford, and the general shenanigans between the coworker characters.
I really liked the coworkers. That was where things got funny. And still made me confused about Emily's character because their reactions were kind of my reaction, where it's like, did you really say that? Did you really accidentally roofie yourself? And we're just gonna casually let that go?
Yeah, she tells them that she roofied herself, came to work to pick up her purse, and saw Clark there glowing. And they were like, sure, sis. Sounds good. What year is it? Who is the president?
How many times did you do cocaine last week? Okay, now your story is changing. Why should we ever believe you?
And I thought that that was the funniest dynamic, though I just loved Tom and Emily. I need to see Melissa McCarthy and Chris Sandiford in something because they had such lovely chemistry. I will say this first episode was all build up, and I think the plot feels pretty straightforward, so I don't understand why we needed this much build up.
We had the scene where Emily sees Clark glowing, and then we have all of this office stuff, which doesn't even feature Clark that heavily. And then we get another Clark scene at the end, and it's like, did we need filler? Is that going to add something later on that we just can't recognize the value of now?
Yes, we just know Clark as a nice guy. That's all his coworkers say about him. He's such a blank slate that I wish they had introduced a little bit of that apocalypse plot into this first episode beyond just the glowing and the Harry Styles song playing every time he was getting a little glowy. I think they would have benefited from giving us the story first because I couldn't tell what I was to buy into. Because as a workplace comedy, it was fine.
Did you at least buy into the chemistry between Clark and Emily?
I mean, they're a married couple in real life, so I can't tell if I just bought it because I know that they are a couple who are frequent creative collaborators. I imagine they must have a lot of wonderful chemistry. And so that one to me, I couldn't even tell if it was the characters, if I just, you know, wholesale accept it.
Maybe that's what they hope people will do. They're just like, we know that is a couple. So when we see it, we believe it.
You know what I did buy, though? I did buy Emily choosing to go on the date with Clark because she wanted to know more about him and this glow and less because she actually had a crush. So maybe that is a testament to their storytelling and acting. I didn't think of them as the married couple. I bought that.
They did it.
They did it. They just would have benefited from doing a little more and putting a little more plot in this first episode and introducing the conflict in this first episode. It is wild to me that the two main action scenes, as you said, were him glowing at the beginning when he's struck by lightning and him glowing toward the end of the episode, and no other reasoning for why, no introduction of like, what is the tension? Why do we care? None of it.
Very strange. And if you look up this show, you'll find out that Satan is a character played by Leslie Bibb. Does not appear in this first episode.
Like, how funny is that? How lovely would that be to take it in the first episode?
Well, will you keep watching to find out when this plot will get started?
Here's what I will say. If you are a fan of comedies, if you are someone who, I think this is a classic for many Netflix viewers, wants a show that is essentially like wallpaper, it just plays on in your home, then I think this is one for you to play. Wow, that feels really mean. I don't mean it like that, but you know what I'm saying. Just a classic Netflix background white noise show. I am not searching for one of those right now, so I probably will not watch. But as a peek into my personal life, I'm going to go visit my parents this week. Maybe when I come back next week and unpack and clean and do all the things, maybe I'll have that show on in the background.
Oh, your unpacking show.
Mm-hmm. What about you?
I would put this in the would watch me while doing laundry, so I'm not unpacking my clothes. I am folding my clothes.
You need clothes to watch this show.
I think you're on to something. Yeah, you need a lot of clothes that need to be managed and moved around while you're watching.
All right, Beej. Well, let's take things from workplace apocalypse comedies to Savannah.
There's a lot going on in Savannah. In First Kill, it's time for teenage vampire Juliet, played by Sarah Catherine Hook, to make her first kill so she can take her place among her powerful family of legacy vampires. They're actually direct descendants of Lilith, who chose to be bitten by the serpent in the Garden of Eden. People are always playing around with that story. Juliet sets her sights romantically on a new girl in town named Calliope, played by Amani Lewis, But what she doesn't know is Calliope is actually from a monster hunting family, the Guardian Guild. And so throughout this series, we're going to see these two coming at odds with each other and trying to kill each other. What were your first impressions on this vampire monster hunter love story?
It is a very funny and silly entry into the genre of Romeo and Juliet, star-crossed young lovers, coming-of-age story, where in this one, they have to kill each other. I thought that that was such a good B-movie twist on this story.
It does feel more like a movie plot line than a TV show plot.
Yeah, I think this would have been a really good B-movie. I don't mind it at all as a show, but it feels like a good cheesy, fun B-movie where you have these two beautiful characters who are attracted to each other, and there's a twist, as with many of these scary movies and shows, where it turns out they gotta kill each other.
Do you like stories about vampires or monster hunters?
You and I once watched Twilight, the first one. I think it was a couple years ago that we saw it for the first time, and that's maybe the extent of what I've taken in that world.
Wow. Yeah, in your old apartment.
Mm-hmm. We watched the first Twilight movie. I had a good old laugh, enjoyed it. And then I think I closed the door, the chapter, the book on vampires until today with First Kill.
And I think another one of our friends who was there immediately watched the next one after that.
Shout out to her. Won't name her for her privacy and dignity. She did go home and finish them. One of us did get very sucked in.
Well, like you, I'm also not particularly drawn to vampire stories. I do like a good monster hunter, I guess. But I think what was more interesting to me, rather than the supernatural elements, was how they tied that into the family histories for Juliet and Calliope. With Juliet, we learn that she has this legacy that her older sister and her mother want her to achieve her vampire greatness, want her to get her first kill, and want her to live up to her potential.
I really liked that, this plot twist that she has to get her first kill or she will essentially go feral. And so it is for the safety of her and her family that she has to do this first kill in a discreet, dignified savanna way. Versus when she reaches a point where she is absolutely starving for blood and will just act out in biology class or something. So it is in her best interest to get her first kill, as far as she and her family know. But she's questioning that. She's questioning why she has to take a life. And then we see on the other side, Cal doing some questioning too. She comes from a family of legacy and legendary monster hunters who haven't needed to monster hunt in a long time. And she's questioning why the guild that they kill for has called them back to Savannah to start hunting monsters for the first time in a long time. It feels like she's the only one in her family who voices out loud, why? What's going on? Why are these strange things happening? They even had an odd interaction with a couple of monsters they were sent to kill, where Cal was the one who was like, it's odd that this type of monster was there with this type of monster. Though I will say, Netflix, triple the budget for these action scenes with the monsters, or zero out the budget and make it super cheesy and corny. But I think it was in a weird middle ground where it wasn't quite good and it wasn't deliciously bad.
Pick a side.
Yes.
I have to agree with your analysis of Cal. I like that she is the one questioning her family. And at the same time, they're all questioning her skill. She tried to get her first monster kill and failed. So now they all have like zero expectations from her. But she wants to prove herself. And so now she's maybe more observant of everything going around her. And I like that we can see that she does have a talent for hunting monsters.
Do you buy the chemistry between her and Juliet?
I will say, from this first episode, it looks like Juliet really, really, really likes Cal. And Cal is like, I'm single, whatever. You're cute enough.
I'm excited to kill you.
Yeah, I'll get that kiss in first.
I will say that there was a little too much narration. I was driven a little wild by it myself, where every single moment was narrated. And in the first half of the episode was narrated by Juliet. Second half of the episode was narrated by Cal. And I think that is a tool that they wanted to use to get us to really understand their chemistry. And I wish they instead just trusted that we understand that these two teens in this teen horror love story have crushes on each other. I get when you're staring at someone over lab tables that you likely have a little crush on them. I don't need the additional almost constant stream of narration that didn't feel additive, like a funny quip or observation, but rather exclusively descriptive of what we were seeing.
Okay, listeners, we're going to break the fourth wall. There's an illusion you have that Me Too and I are glued to our seats, eyes on the screen, notebook in our hands, focused for 55 minutes at a time. That's not always the case. For this show, I was building something from IKEA, a little distracted, and the narration was great. It kept me going throughout the story. I feel like I picked up every plot point, but my eyes were not always on the screen, so I did not mind hearing every single thought from these two characters.
Whereas I, as you described, was sitting on my couch, literal notebook in hand, watching the show. So I'm watching it, and then I'm listening to them be like, I'm walking down the hall, looking you in the eye. And she's literally walking down the hall, looking her in the eye. I was just like, what is happening? I know too much, actually, of what is happening.
I thought it was great. It worked for me.
Is that your rating, then? Watch it while building furniture?
No. I mean, I would recommend trying that. My rating is a would watch again casually. I think this is a generic love story. But if that is what you want, if you just want a supernatural teen drama love story, this is going to satisfy that craving.
I completely agree. I would watch again casually too. For anyone who is searching for just a fun, juicy teen show, in this case with a vampire twist, then I think you'll have an enjoyable afternoon with this show. And for my fellow babies, it's not too scary. There's not too much blood. There's not too much gore. And quite frankly, the monster scenes are not that scary because they are a little bit silly.
Nothing to fear here.
No, nothing at all. So, Beej, what would your esports name be?
Me Too the Destroyer.
Ooh, okay, I like it.
Yeah?
I love that.
Okay, and you're my mascot. Just your head will be on my branded merch.
Do I get to, like, see a cut of that because it's my name and my face?
I'll get you, like, a free hat and a free t-shirt. You won't have to pay for any merch.
Wow. That's so generous of you. Okay, where can people find more episodes of The Pilot Podcast?
All you have to do is head to our website at thepilotpodcast.com and be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast platform.
You can also follow us on TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter at ThePilotPod. And you can send thoughts, feelings, show recommendations, because every other week we do a show recommended by you, our wonderful listeners. And your esports name to askthepilotpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Bye.